Hello, America, how are you? A bit of a deep inflection at the end of it. Hello, America, my name is Jeff Heatherly, or perhaps Jeffrey Heatherly, because clearly I can't say my own name. And welcome, one and all, to the Original Unoriginal Podcast. It's been a long month of podcasting for myself and my guest tonight. I don't even know where to begin. But I'll go ahead and introduce my guest, and this time I'm not going to use that lame-ass segue that I've been using about by we, but I'll just continue to say that he is my longest-running guest thus far. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, Nick Melton.
Hi, everybody.
Yes, very good to have him back. I gotta tell you, Nick, these people don't know, but they got a surprise waiting for them at the end of this episode that we just recorded, and it makes me giggle.
Makes me giggle.
You know what?
Inside and outside.
Meanwhile, you know what I just realized?
What?
We never went back and listened to it. We should probably do that at some point.
We should at some point.
Yes. Actually, no, we'll do it now. Let's go ahead and do this now. We'll have that delightful hold music for the people. Here we go. And we're back! I don't know why I did that just then.
Trey South Park of you.
Yeah. It is very Trey Parker. Like, I love... Yeah, we've talked about this before, like, off-air, but, like, I love that voice he uses, that strained, like, 80s, almost Scott Stappian 90s rock voice.
On Team America, freedom isn't free.
The half to fucking free.
Yeah.
Freedom cost a buck a fan.
It's not really that hefty a fee.
Honestly, if freedom only costs everybody a buck or five, I think we can manage.
Yeah, I think everybody would be free.
Oh, I wish I had that song, but I don't.
Well, that song isn't free either. You have to buy it off of iTunes.
I'm sure. But you know what song I do have?
What?
I have a song that was the theme song to a failed Fox Western pilot.
Yes.
The lyrics don't make a lot of sense.
They don't.
And that show was entitled Cal Johnson.
There was a man who shot the man who was the man who shot the man, Cal Johnson.
You know, I might be able to time it out right that it'll actually play the song with you at that moment. If I work it out correctly, I can make that happen.
But it's such brilliant writing.
It's only a minute long song, so I'll go ahead and say it by this point. It's probably over. But the point is, Cal Johnson is a brilliant song, sketch, piece, what have you, that Seth MacFarlane created for, I believe it was last Sunday or Sunday before last, Fox aired this special called Seth and Alex's Almost Live Comedy Variety Hour or something of that nature. And it was Seth MacFarlane and Alex Borstein, who you know as the voices of, you know, most of the men on Family Guy, and then Lois.
Yeah, she doesn't do any other voices, does she?
Well, she does Trisha Takanawa, Asian reporter. Trisha Takanawa, and Loretta Brown whenever she comes around. But,
Trisha Takanawa.
Diane, I'm standing in front of a mirror.
We sent our own little foreigner, Asian reporter Trisha Takanawa.
But anyway, Cal Johnson is this bit. The song is clearly over by now.
Clearly.
But Cal Johnson is this bit from that special in which it was Seth MacFarlane was doing. It was a bit of a running thing where he was talking about how Fox had all these failed shows. And it was making reference to the fact that when they first came back in 2005, there was that. In the very first episode back, there was that long speech,
yeah,
a long list where Peter just lists off every show that Fox has canceled since Family Guy was canceled that one time. And it's a long list. And that leads into this discussion on the variety special where he talks about, once again, as I mentioned, a failed Fox Western pilot where the theme song lyrics just didn't make a whole lot of sense. And the show was called Cal Johnson. And what proceeds to happen, and I urge you to check this out on YouTube if copies still exist by this point, who's to say
on
Fox
Bluetooth.
On BlueTube, Because who's to say Fox won't, like, file some cease and desist order or something? But we can only... I know, isn't that lame? But we can only hope it'll still be there so you can find it. But look for Cal Johnson. You may want to search Seth MacFarlane Cal Johnson. But if you see TV's Patrick Warburton in a cowboy hat, you know you've found the right thing.
Yeah, the cowboy hat. He wore a hat, his favorite hat. He loved that hat. He hated hats, Cal Johnson. Cal Johnson.
I hope it'll allow us that space in between those two words. We gotta get the, like, the rhythm is so important. Because you know how this editing equipment doesn't care for long pauses.
No, it doesn't.
As we both learned, because now, at this point we can officially talk about it, because Nick has his own podcast now by the name of Cinemantics.
Yes, it's a movie-oriented podcast. It's the third episode was just released.
Indeed.
Some more on the way. So, exciting times.
Very exciting times.
Smiles times, definitely.
We are definitely smiles times. But
you have a little exciting little update about.
I do actually. I was going to lead into our sort of more dramatic discussion, but I think we should lead with something happy for the folks.
Yes.
I mean, Cal Johnson's delightful, but this is also big news. Some of you may be first time listeners, and the reason for that is for your regular listeners. As of tonight, we're recording this episode. I don't mind telling you the date we're recording this. We're recording this tonight. It is November 13th, 2009, and as of November 11th or 12th, I forget, it may have been 2 days ago, I don't recall. The point is, in this week, as of this week, this wonderful show of mine, the original unoriginal podcast, is now available directly on the iTunes Store.
Exciting times.
It's very exciting, I can't lie.
Up until this week, it was a very grassroots sort of podcast. You'd have to either stumble by accident across the webpage or know Jeff to know that it existed.
Basically, and now...
And now you can search for it on iTunes and find it.
Or stumble upon it while searching for something else on iTunes.
Yeah. So it's an exciting time.
Just look
I hope to, at some point, get Cinemantics on there, but as of now, it's still its own little...
Yeah.
Underground things.
Cinemanticspodcast.blogspot.com for you folks.
Yay!
Check it out because it's a wonderful show. I make a few appearances.
You do.
It's pretty great. I mean, although of course we have had one crossover episode at this point, so people are aware
that it exists.
Because of episode
yeah.
13 of this show, in which we discussed Hocus Pocus for our special Halloween episode. But Well, Nick, I mean, we've been talking about these happy things, but we do need to talk about something that's a bit dramatic for a moment.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know, this is a conversational episode of the OUP, and as such, it is, you know, mostly inspired by the style of Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier's Smodcast. Now, every once and again on that show, Kevin Smith or Scott Mosier will bring some sort of news item to the table, something to be discussed. And usually it's something crazy like, you know, something you'd read in a tablet about, like somebody being born with like three heads or something. Like, it's something ridiculous. But, in the past 2 weeks I've come upon something that, this is nothing to be laughed at. This is something very unfortunate. It really gets to me. It really bothers me. And, I've chatted it up about this with a lot of people, but I think it's time to kind of put it out in the public forum, even though it already is, but really... Really talk about it for
yeah,
a short
but, you know, it's not really been a big news story, and I'm sort of surprised.
I certainly am as well, but well, I think part of this is kind of explicable, corporate America and payoffs and
right.
the kind of things that hippies hate.
Right.
You know, anyway, let's get to the brass tacks here, because this is going to be some hard conversation. So folks, I hope you enjoyed the lightheartedness of Cal Johnson and this show being on the iTunes Store, because we need to get serious for a moment, and I'm really not kidding. This comes to us from a website called Box Turtle Bulletin, which is directive is news analysis and fact checking of anti-gay rhetoric. I myself am a straight male. My dear friend Nick here is a homosexual male, proud gay fella, as I mentioned in that one episode a couple episodes back.
Still the best description ever.
A proud gay fella. I'm very pro-gay. I enjoy the gays, and I appreciate them, and I wish them to have all the rights and privileges that everyone does, because they're folk. They're wonderful folk.
They're queer as folk.
Indeed. I'm glad you can keep a kind of a light heart to this, because it's about to get real. Trust me, what you're about to understand is what I'm about to read to you folks. I've been talking it up a little too much, but It's disgusting. And once again, coming from the Box Turtle Bulletin, the article is entitled "Walmart Bans Gay Couple for Not Shoplifting." I'll read you the article. It's a bit of a long one, so do stay with us, please. It's actually, as Nick said, it was an article. It's an article with some opinion.
It's like an article that's separated at the beginning and end by the author at Box Turtle Bulletin's opinion about said article.
Yes, yeah. But anyway, I gotta make sure I'm able to get through this. I don't want to be in... I worry we're not putting enough of a... here we go. Not every confrontation that a gay person experiences in their life is based on their orientation, but sometimes it is very difficult to see any other possible explanation. Take the experience that Joe Paolucci, Thomas Hitchcock, and their special needs twins had recently with Walmart. Employees at the Niles, Michigan Walmart store accused Paolucci of shoplifting some Bic lighters. Although he produced the receipt, they refused to back down, insisting that the two men go to a quote-unquote detention room. The employees, using vulgarities and hostility, frightened their special needs kids. That's courtesy of the South Bend Tribune. A bit more of a explanation here. Paolucci said that while he and Hitchcock were attempting to calm down the boys, the employees ordered them to enter a detention room for questioning. Fearful of what might happen behind closed doors, he and Hitchcock refused to enter and asked to speak to a manager. Some guy came up and said, "I'm the manager," and then turned around and left, Hitchcock said. Paolucci said he and Hitchcock then asked store personnel to call police. Within minutes, deputies from the Berrien County Sheriff's Department, Niles Township Patrol, arrived. Pleasing Paolucci, who said he thought a few questions and a review of the store's videotapes and computer records would quickly resolve the matter. He said he was shocked when he was immediately handcuffed without a question being asked and placed in the back seat of a squad car. Hitchcock was handcuffed, but also was also placed in the back seat of a second squad car. The twins, despite the protests of Paolucci and Hitchcock, were turned over to the store's security personnel, who took them into the quote-unquote detention room, or what police referred to as a security room. A review of the security tapes proved that Paolucci and Hitchcock had done no wrong. So the store management profusely apologized and expressed their remorse, right? No, they did not. The two said they expected an apology and were surprised once again when personnel from the store walked out to the squad cars of the twins and read from a statement that Paolucci and Hitchcock had been banned by the store chain for life. Rather than shoplifting, the reason they were given was quote-unquote being uncooperative. By the time they were read the statement, Paolucci and Hitchcock said the twins had told them that security staff had allegedly threatened them in the security room and had made disparaging remarks about Paolucci and Hitchcock's lifestyle. Paolucci and Hitchcock said they asked police to take statements from the boys, but the officers refused, telling the couple they'd have to contact Child Protective Services. Walmart even refused to replace frozen items that had now thawed due to their unprovoked misuse of the customers. Nor did the situation end at the harassment of the couple at the store. Paolucci said the boys have suffered a type of post-traumatic stress disorder since the experience. Both wet their beds, although one has stopped, and both have had nightmares about one security employee in particular, he said. They're terrified, horrified. We've had to change their medication twice, he said. And what does Walmart corporate have to say? Paolucci and Hitchcock emailed the Tribune a copy of a letter from a law firm representing Walmart seeking 10 times the retail price of the items the store still claims were shoplifted by Paolucci. The letter states that the matter will be dropped if Paolucci submits the $158.40 payment. Now, this is not the first time that Walmart has been perceived as hostile to gay Americans. In 2007, HRC advised against giving our business to Walmart, and just in April of this year, the CEO signed his name to a petition to ban gay couples from adopting. Walmart doesn't care about my opinion, and there's little I can do to impact their decision to treat gay customers with hostility. But perhaps there are those, even in Niles, Michigan, who will decide that this situation is just one too many. If they cannot give their custom to bad neighbors, that it may be worth an extra nickel and a further drive to frequent the stores that do not abuse customers solely because they, quote-unquote, disapprove of their lifestyle, and who admit it and apologize when they are wrong. All I can do is spread the word. That is courtesy, once again, of the Box Turtle Bulletin, which you can find at boxturtlebulletin.com. Nick Melton, having heard all that, and you've read this article before, I'll yield the floor to you for a little bit, since you're...
You know, the first thing I'd have to say about that, before I get on to whatever personal feelings I may have about it, is I read this story on a different website called The Advocate, which is a very prominent...
I'm familiar with The Advocate, yes.
Very prominent gay news magazine.
So it has been getting
press in the gay community. But I haven't seen any mention of it outside of that.
That's ridiculous.
This is just more trivia than anything else, but evidently the lighters that he purchased were not on the receipt.
Hmm.
An analysis of the security cameras showed that he hadn't stolen them. It just, when he produced the receipt, they weren't on there. So right. I think that might have added some to the confusion. I mean, I don't know exactly what the full story is. Because these two stories say the exact opposite. They were on the receipt here, they weren't on the receipt there. What it boils down to is that Walmart treated people badly for no reason.
Indeed.
You know, I've never liked Walmart. There was a story a few years back where it got some press where one of the stores was set on fire and they couldn't get out. The night staff couldn't get out because Walmart's policy is to lock all the doors at night. And evidently this guy didn't have a key to get out. So he almost basically like burned to death in the store.
Yeah.
And he's all right. But, you know, it's just this company cares nothing about people, not its employees and not its customers. And it's just... sort of, I hate hearing these barbaric stories. You know, like, who thinks it's all right to treat people that way? I mean, really. It doesn't matter if they're gay or Muslim or any sort of minority. People are people, and why the hell can't we just treat people like people for once? You know. I mean, this story, I can't say it makes me really angry, but it makes me very sort of depressed and shocked that people still, that this is still happening.
Right.
Really, don't we live in the 21st century, you know?
We do.
Like, honestly, come on. Let's step it up here. Let's, you know. Come on, Walmart. I saw this bumper sticker that says, Voldemort, always the most evil. Always. And it's true. I'm sorry, but this is just one more reason for me to go to Target instead of Walmart.
Yeah. The problem is, and the first time I read this, I mean, I was almost, it really almost broke me. I hate injustice in a general sense.
I feel at times like I'm a bad gay, so to speak, because these things don't really make me angry anymore. It's like I've been angry for so long about so much stuff that I'm tired of being angry. I can't be angry anymore over everything that people do. I can just sort of have this resigned, cynical outlook on it. And
you've been burned so many times by stories like this that you've almost been desensitized, really.
Yeah, it's like it's just my reaction to a story like this is just, of course.
Yeah.
And then just sort of hope that it gets better, and it is it's just disheartening to see that it isn't getting any better. You know, like Maine, I think, just repealed the gay marriage law.
Yeah.
So, what can I say? It's just frustrating and disheartening. This story is horrible.
I could take this opportunity to get really cynical and, you know, be like, I'm not surprised it happened in Michigan.
You know, for some reason I thought Michigan was a blue state, just because it was more north than North Carolina, but...
I actually don't know their color, but I'm just... or their political color, I should say, but I have personal issues with the state of Michigan. And they apparently have personal issues with me, so...
I don't know what that means.
I will not go into an extensive amount here for the public listeners, but my first ex is from Michigan, and all the ladies of her family are from Michigan, and Michigan doesn't care for me. I've met a lot of people from Michigan who have been very rude to me, mistreated me.
The French of the U.S.,
basically, but I like the French more, honestly.
Yeah, me too. When I went to France last year, you just have to know what you're getting into when you go over there. People think of the French as cold and distant, but it's just because that's their social norm.
Right.
Like, if you are sitting on the subway, for example, and you smile at someone, they consider that flirtatious. It's not you being polite, it's you flirting. That's why they keep very neutral facial expressions in public.
That's why, like, the French and, reputation is that very demure.
Right, and,
that, kind
and
of...
you know, like, here in America, we're expected to smile at people because that means that we're not being rude and impolite.
Right.
Over there, it means there's more behind it than we would, than we over here would assume. So if you don't know that and you go over there, it does make all of them look really cold. But you just have to, you know, knowledge is power. And knowledge is half the battle.
G.I. Joe! Now I kind of wish that was the stinger. Oh, but you know, trust me, folks. You've got a really delightful surprise at the end of this episode.
It is wonderful.
I mean, I don't know where to go from here, because, I mean...
Just to mention it, I guess, you know, let people... Spread the word!
Yeah, spread the word, because, I mean, as Nick mentioned, this is not getting a lot of note in the mainstream press, and it's... And I understand that we are in a country that is very... I mean, despite a lot of the advances we've made in terms of philosophy and as a people, and the fact that, you know, our president is the awesome person that he is, speaking, of course, of Barack Obama, if this is being listened to years from now, I'm not referring to should we be in another hellish Republican presidency, whatever bastard that's going to be, but...
You know, you got to wonder about the future of the Republican Party, because they've just been smacked down so... hard in
well,
the last,
be honest,
like,
do they not deserve it? I mean, they definitely deserve
well, that's
it.
Not, it's not a question of whether or not they deserve it. They just keep making mistakes, and they can't come into the 21st century. They refuse to let go of their outdated dogmas, and it's really hurting them as a party.
Yeah.
Like, I wrote a blog entry a while back about Meghan McCain. I don't know if you saw it or read it.
Daughter of John McCain?
Daughter of John McCain.
Yeah.
She has been going... She, for a while, for a few months, she was making the rounds on all these TV shows, like Larry King and The View.
Right.
She was on Colbert Report as well, talking about how you can still be a Republican and be pro-gay.
I bet you can.
And... But she has been denounced by everybody. Rush Limbaugh hates her. The New York Times.
He hates everyone, though.
Yeah, I'm just saying he's a very. I just use him as an example because
right.
He's a prominent conservative. It, and now,
indeed.
And more and more these days, at least on the media, they're portraying the conservative movement as being more and more aligned with Limbaugh. So that he would denounce her is telling. I mean, the New York Times probably would too. But I mean, like, their argument is she looks like a sorority girl and she's going around trying to be a politician. But I mean, like, if you ask me, everybody's opinion is valid.
Right.
But, you know, the fact that the Republicans would denounce her just, like, further proves that they need to hop on the bus.
Get on the bus.
Yeah, get on the bus and get on to the 21st century, please. Otherwise, I think that the party as we know it may collapse. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, at least in my opinion. I'm a diehard, staunch liberal and Democrat. But, you know, that's really all I have to say about that.
Yeah. But the point is, if you're listening to this and you've been informed, do indeed spread the word. Because this is... I feel terrible about this, though. I mean, to kind of go back to this subject for a moment, I feel terrible about it because while this did affect me deeply, and while I have a number of... You know, as I mentioned, I do enjoy my gays. And I've got a number of them that I frequent in hanging out with, And I feel like, you know, I have a responsibility to have a real fuck Walmart attitude. I mean, I do, clearly. But the problem is I know I'm going to end up going there to buy deodorant again. It's such a tough road to hoe. And I'm talking not just about, like, in this particular situation, but from a purely economic standpoint. You know, I can't afford to go anywhere else to buy toiletries, you know, like as an example, you know, even when we, the most responsible, most awesome thing I could say here is I'm never going there again, but I can't make that promise, and it makes me feel like an asshole, and that's kind of the biggest problem that I have here, is that this story, even though I'm fully dead set against everything these people did to this couple and their children, I know that I'm going to end up going back to Walmart, and it makes me want to stab myself in the face. Like, you know, I feel terrible. Can you help me here?
Well, that's why I have been known to go in Walmart every now and again. That's the problem with a company like Walmart. for people who are in an economic slump, and let's face it, most of the country is in an economic slump, and the media likes to portray the economy is getting better right now, but from what I've read on the inside reports, like economists, it's not getting better. So, well, that's a depressing subject in and of itself.
Yeah.
But people have to go where they can afford things. And like it or not, Walmart is like the cheapest department store-y place ever.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, from a purely, like, kind of snobbish college guy kind of standpoint, it's not like I'm buying clothes there.
Right.
I buy my socks there because everyone has Hanes socks. But, you know, Hanes dry, and this one's got a hole in it. But
I don't think my socks are Hanes.
Well, I know, but I wear Hanes socks.
Oh.
That's
well,
just... That's
well, you said everyone.
I didn't... What did I do?
Nailed ya.
Ha, you burnt.
Ha, ha, you burnt. So I don't know why I felt the need to repeat what you just said.
It's fine.
It's fun.
You put more passion into it than I do.
Well, there's just so many ways of using that as a...
There's so many ways to use so many wonderful things from 30 Rock. This is me turning the subject away from something depressing and turning it onto something
happy. I agree.
Like 30 Rock. And Tina Fey.
Tina Fey is amazing.
Yes.
I would marry Tina Fey in a heartbeat.
As would I.
She's like... a geek goddess.
Really, she is.
It's like, I have no desire to be with a woman ever, but I would make an exception for Tina Fey.
I like that.
Because she's just like me, except she's a woman. I feel like whenever I watch 30 Rock that I am Liz Lemon, only a guy 15 years younger.
Like, I've felt that way before.
Like, and I've actually done some research, because I didn't want to say, I love Tina Fey, when you love the character, Liz Lemon, so much. It could be you just like that fictional character.
Right.
But, a lot of Liz Lemon's characteristics are actually modeled after Fey herself, because she wants to keep the portrayal truthful.
Yeah.
So, I feel better obsessing over Tina Fey, because she's actually like that.
Yeah.
And she uses, like, Star Wars references all the time in her day-to-day life. As well as on the show.
Are my eyes really this far apart?
I look like Admiral Ackbar.
It's a trap!
No, Captain Nita dies! He dies! That show is wonderful. And, you know, nobody I really talk to, aside from you and my best friend Sarah, has ever seen it or watched it.
That's insane!
Whenever I bring up 30 Rock to people, they're like, no, I've never seen it.
Gosh.
But it's the arrested development of right now.
Yeah, it certainly is.
One of those shows that critics and those in the know agree is the funniest show on TV and no one watches it.
I mean, clearly enough people watch it that it's going to have a longer life than Arrested Development. But
yeah, I guess Arrested Development is, in the long run, probably a better show.
It's true.
Arrested Development was just brilliant. But how wonderful is it that Will Arnett is in both shows?
Yes, that's the little bridge there.
Yes.
If only that show had some Jeffrey Tambor going on.
They should bring Jeffrey Tambor onto 30 Rock as Don Geiss's partner. I don't know, some fat cat executive.
Yeah.
I could see them making that work.
I think it would be also be kind of appropriate considering they've had John Lithgow on there in a cameo at some point. And do you remember when 30 Rock first started back in 2006? It was paired on Tuesday nights with a show called 20 Good Years with John Lithgow and Jeffrey Tambor.
Never heard of that show.
Well, it was fantastic, and it didn't get near enough of a good shake.
Well, it probably got canceled, am I correct?
Definitely. But it was great. And it was... They had the two shows with the numbers in the title on Tuesday nights.
Ah, the number night.
Yeah. Well, except with the exception of Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, which came on Mondays, but... That was a weird season for NBC.
What else did they have going on for them?
Back then?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I mean, oh, Heroes. Heroes
season.
Started that year.
Yeah, the only good season of Heroes thus far.
I would argue that this season is pretty good, but no.
They're on
season four now. I would agree that show has...
Well, I remember when it came out, it was like such a fad. You know, Heroes,
It was basically the new Lost.
And then after season two started, you never heard about it again.
Not really.
And it's like hard to remember what all the fuss was about.
It's because, I mean, there's a lot of factors. A lot of people would say that it's because Brian Fuller left the writing staff. Brian Fuller is the guy who created Pushing Daisies and...
Which also got canned.
Wonderfalls and did like Dead Like Me.
Basically all these great shows that got canned.
Basically.
I know you're not a huge fan of Wonderfalls, but then again, you haven't seen much of it, so...
I've only seen the pilot, and it really... To be... Although, in all honesty, you remember my reaction to the pilot of Wonderfalls. It was almost... It was kind of violent.
It was. I mean, but like... Like I like to point out, the pilot is frequently like the worst episode in the series.
I know that. But it wasn't even that it was a bad pilot, because it wasn't really a bad pilot, it was just I didn't find anything likable about those characters whatsoever.
They're not likable, and that's its big pitfall at first. The more you watch the show, the more you like the characters, but none of them are really immediately likable.
Right.
Which is a problem, except for the bartender, he's likable. But yeah. The main character is kind of this cold, distant bitch, basically.
Yeah, the point is, you would easily recommend Wonderfalls.
I would easily recommend it. It's like one of the great shows that no one's ever seen.
Right.
And I mean, it only lasted for one season. So, it had like 12 episodes, 13 episodes.
Yeah. I'm wondering if the microphone, if the listeners can hear the sound that is not us.
Of ice, yeah. Cold as ice. Wear some Foreigner when you need it.
I can make some Foreigner happen. Like,
have you seen that episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force
with the Foreigner
gets
belts?
The belt that gives him the power of Foreigner songs?
I
think that's a brilliant concept. I want a Foreigner belt.
I just can't wait to find out which Foreigner song I'll be using. I really wonder if our listeners can hear that. We're gonna find out now. We're gonna pause the episode and put on the hold music and see if we can hear that.
Pausing.
Here we are back again. And indeed, you could hear that, couldn't you?
Yeah, the blender.
Yeah, yeah. It's certain people I live with are a couple of dicks. Like that movie that's coming out by directed by Kevin Smith, entitled A Couple of Dicks.
With Bruce Willis.
With Bruce Willis
and Tracy Morgan.
Yes, Tracy Morgan.
He's bringing the black back to NBC like peacocks, right, Janet?
Please watch 30 Rock, people. That's all we can say. Because it's wonderful. But speaking of Tina Fey, we talked about this earlier today. I want to talk about it because I'm gushing. And you weren't impressed. You're not as excited, but I am. I urge the listeners to go over to apple.com/trailers, which I would easily endorse as like the end-all be-all of trailer sites, because they always have the best quality. But there is a new trailer that has hit the old interwebs today, or last night as it were, for a film coming out in April of next year, April 2010 as it were, called Date Night, starring Tina Fey and Steve Carell, two of my favorite people in the business.
And before we go any further, I have to say that they are my favorite people in this too, so what I will tell you after Jeff says his stuff... Don't hold it against me.
Indeed. I'm not going to go into too much detail about the movie or what you'll see if you watch this trailer. I'll just say that I'll give you a bit of a reason to be kind of intrigued by this movie from a sort of a historical perspective, if that's the way to put it. There is a list of screenplays in Hollywood. I've told Nick about this, so he knows where I'm going with this. There's a list of screenplays in Hollywood... much like, as I mentioned, Kevin Smith's upcoming A Couple of Dicks, and it is a list of screenplays that go unproduced. And it's not because they're bad screenplays, it's because of things like the studio has budgetary concerns, like there's no way we could pull this off, basically, that sort of thought, you know. Or it's something that's just so good, but like they just can never make time for it. I mean, it really is kind of like the procrastinators list. It speaks nothing of anything's quality, it's more just about, like, studios have other priorities in mind. Like, big budget summer movies and shitty romantic comedies with Katherine Heigl and Gerard Butler.
Ooh. So snap.
They have better things to do, quote unquote. But, so there are some movies that get left out. And, for instance, Kevin Smith's upcoming film, A Couple of Dicks, which I'll mention a number of times because, one, the title is awesome, and two, because it's going to be an awesome movie. Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan. Can't beat it. You just can't. But anyway, I think it's called the Hollywood Blacklist. I cannot be certain of that, but I think that's what it's called. And it's this list of screenplays, like I said, that just they go unproduced. A Couple of Dicks was one, and Date Night, this film with Tina Fey and Steve Carell, was one. And it's... I mean, I'll go ahead and give you the plot, because the plot is kind of publicly known now, but the trailer is just fun. It's about this married couple. They've been together for so ever long, and, you know, their marriage is getting stale, and their kids are driving them crazy, so they decide to take an night off for themselves, go out in the town, have dinner, and a date. Date night, you know? And in through some crazy, wacky shenanigans, they end up on the run from some not-so-reputable characters, and action and comedy ensue. It's basically take two of the funniest people in the business, two of the most renowned, most wonderful people, Tina Fey and Steve Carell, and put them into an action comedy. Which, I know just me saying that sounds terrible, but I'm very excited, if not only because it's just the two of them, but because Nick is already burning to say some things. I can see it in his eyes. I'm excited about it. Check out the trailer. And after you do, remember what I said, and then we'll let Nick say what he wants to say. Go, Nick.
And you can post comments on the website at originalunoriginalpodcast.blogspot.com.
Yes, you can.
Let us know what you think.
Yes.
Website plug. Anyway, I was not impressed. I'm sorry. You know I love Steve Carell and Tina Fey.
Yes.
But the movie looked like another version of Get Smart. Except instead of Mel Brooks' characters, it was these new original characters. And Get Smart was only even remotely good because Steve Carell was good enough to carry the material as well as he could.
I would say, I would disagree with you and say that it was just fantastic, but go ahead.
Oh, well.
I love Get Smart, sir, is basically what I'm trying to say.
Oh, well. I mean, it was an enjoyable film. It wasn't a great film, but it wasn't a really bad film. I felt a lot of it worked as well as it did because of Steve Carell, is the point. I feel like Date Night is one of those, could be, easily one of those movies that only succeeds because Carell and Fey are so good and not because the material they're working with is in of itself great.
Right.
I feel like they... I just hope the script is good, is what I'm saying. Like, the trailer made it look like just a generic action movie with Steve Carell and Tina Fey in there, and I didn't really get much out of it. Plus, it felt kind of weird having Steve Carell and Tina Fey together.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it was like...
It feels kind of like an NBC no-brainer, you know?
Well, it is kind of a no-brainer, but on the other hand, it's like... Steve Carell and Tina Fey are both so well-known for their personas that, like... I couldn't ever see Michael Scott and Liz Lemon together.
Well, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to see, like, Dan in Real Life and... Chick from Baby Mama together.
Well, I haven't seen either of those films.
I've only seen one of them. I've seen Dan in Real Life, which is awesome, by the way.
But it's like, you bring these perceptions with you to these movies, and it's, like, just watching it in the trailer, it was just sort of incongruous to me. Like, maybe in the movie they pull it off, but I was thinking, wow, Liz Lemon and Michael Scott. That's weird. That's a weird pairing. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being paranoid and weird. And it will turn out to be the best comedy of the last 5 years, which I sincerely hope so, because there have not been, like, really that many classic comedies released in the last couple of years.
You make an okay point. I could argue a couple have been pretty great.
Well, I didn't say all of them are bad.
Right, right. But
I mean, a few of them are good. The Apatow films tend to be pretty good.
Definitely, yes.
And the Apatow-produced films tend to be good. But most of them just are pandering to the lowest common denominator... Not really that funny.
No.
Like, we went to go see 2012 tonight, and there were some trailers attached to the new Hugh Grant film.
Hugh Grant and Sarah Jessica Parker in Did You Hear About the Morgans?
And there was some other comedy film, I feel, that we saw the trailer for.
Shit, what did we see? Oh, maybe I'm trying to forget.
The point being, neither of them were funny, and people in the audience were laughing all around us. I'm like,
they
really?
Were.
The... Like, really? People actually find this funny now? But, anyway, that's all I gotta say.
Yeah. I realize we just talked about a movie.
Yeah, but it wasn't so much about a movie as it was the trailer.
Yeah. Point is, I'm excited about Date Night. Nick is skeptical.
I'm skeptical, but I'll see it.
Yeah.
I will eat my words if I need to.
Listen, I'll go ahead and tell you this. I can definitely... Listen, I can see a world... I'm not disputing this. I can see a world where this movie is going to be... What are these two wonderful people doing in this piece of shit? I can see that happening. I'm not going to dispute that's not a very distinct possibility. What I can't not love is the fact that, one, I love when unexpected people are in action situations. For some reason, that does something for me. I love that.
Well, that's because it's not like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, like, people, like, they're not action heroes, so it sort of makes them more relatable.
Yeah.
Who can actually relate to Arnold Schwarzenegger in, like, Commando or Predator? Nobody looks like that, for one thing.
No.
Like, just that in of itself distances the audience. So people like it when it's, like, sort of underdog heroes who have to grow into their roles. And that's why I kind of like that Mark Wahlberg is a supporting character in this movie.
Yeah, this movie has an interesting supporting cast.
He has carried action films before, and yeah. I've always liked Mark Wahlberg.
He's a delightful fella.
And, like, I also mean from an aesthetic point of view. I like him as an actor. Sure, he was great in The Departed and whatnot. But, you know, in Planet of the Apes, where he's got that cool haircut and that awesome, tight, shirty thing, I like that. I'll admit it. But I like it that they relegated him to the supporting.
Yeah, yeah.
And James Franco, who's also more of a leading man in an action film, I guess, than you kind would of. Say for Steve Carell.
And Mila Kunis.
Yeah, Mila Kunis. Yeah, I've come to like her more ever since I saw Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah, yeah. She's really great, actually.
Yeah, she's horrible in the other movies that I've seen her in where it's a live-action thing. I'm thinking specifically of American Psycho 2. But she's pretty good in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and I'm curious to see what they do with her
film. She's really coming to her own, because I'll tell you, if you ever go back and watch the pilot to that 70s show, ooh, it's really painful to watch her. Because, of course, it's even crazier because you consider... people who've watched that 70s show know this, and people who know a little bit about that show know this. When she shot the pilot for that show, first off, her character was supposed to be like... Actually, no, she was playing age of character. She was 14 when she shot the pilot for that 70s show. And she was playing like a 14 or 15-year-old. And in retrospect, it's kind of creepy to hear her having these conversations about her and, you know, Ashton Kutcher's character having sex. It's really kind of creepy, to be honest. But the pilot of that 70s show, there's this one scene, this very key scene between Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher that is one of the most excruciating moments of television I've ever had to watch. Because it's it was like her first major anything. And it's terrible. Of course, now she's coming to her own because she's making all these movies and she's Meg.
The ever-suffering Meg.
Meg Griffin.
And she actually speaks Russian.
Not much
fluently.
You can do, Meg Griffin! But...
You'll be larger than life.
I'll be glad proud you fell out of my wife!
That's the best line ever.
I gotta restrain myself from singing the whole song, because...
Man, that's such a great song.
Yeah.
You can't dance.
You can't sing. No, you pretty much can't do a thing.
And in Blue Harvest, she's relegated to that one pathetic cameo.
As the trash monster. Yeah.
Yeah. That is actually called a Dianoga in Star Trek lore.
Star Wars.
Wars!
Oh. I've done that. I don't feel bad. As a nerd, I have done that.
No, see, I corrected myself with a 30 reference.
Well, no, I know, which I love. But I'm just saying I've done that before.
Right.
Even as a nerd, and recently even, I've done that. It's true because you have these two franchises that both start with Star. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, and admittedly, no one does it with Stargate in Star Wars. But
that's because nobody watches Stargate.
Well, also because Stargate... Somehow there's something about the fact that Stargate is one word.
Right.
And Star Wars and Star Trek are two words.
Stargates, like two words, maybe.
Yeah.
I never would have made that mistake before, but in college I sort of blossomed as a Trekkie and was able to reconcile my Star Wars love with Star Trek. So
yeah,
now I unabashedly love both of them, which is kind of problematic in some senses, because how can you be a Star Trek fan and a Star Wars fan? You know, people are always having that argument, which is better.
Yeah, yeah.
Star Wars, by the way, is the correct answer. but yeah.
Meg Griffin,
I had a dream.
It's all about you, Meg Griffin. Not much you can do, Meg Griffin. No, we gotta stop.
But if the listeners could just piece together bits of it and have most of the song by now.
Yeah, actually, I've got the song, so it's probably been playing underneath some part of this conversation.
You know what I really hate?
What?
The way that song was originally edited in the original show...
during the final note of that song, they cut to commercial break.
Yeah.
And then they come back from commercials and he's still singing that final note. What I really hate is whenever they show repeats of that show, they just edit it together.
Yeah,
and there's no commercial break, which like in the middle of that note, and I think, well, that just ruins like the comedic value.
Yeah, the joke
the
there
whole
is
premise.
Brilliant.
Yeah, like Family Guy did a lot of cool stuff with commercial break jokes. Like, there's that one where they go to Hollywood, and he's like, where the people are smart and funny, and they always say something clever right before a commercial break, and then there's this long pause, and then it cuts to commercial.
Yeah. Oh. People on shows like Just Shoot Me.
Which I've never seen.
I've only seen a couple episodes, but the only reason why I said this, and I'm not trying to lead this into a discussion of this, because clearly we've got other things to do, but since we're not going to do an episode about it anytime soon, George Segal.
Who is George Segal?
George Segal, or George Segal, I can't remember which way it's supposed to be pronounced, but he was the, in 2012, he was the, of the, you know, the jazz duo, he was the white Jewy guy.
Oh yeah, that guy. Yeah. And that other guy who I recognized, but whose name I don't know.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of things. I feel like he was on Dead Like Me, actually. He was in the pilot of Dead Like Me.
Yeah, as we record this, the movie's only been out for one day, so...
Yeah, we did toy with doing it for an episode of Cinemantics, but we did...
scheduling conflicts sort of...
I'm going to go ahead and tell the folks about this.
Go ahead.
A couple weeks ago, when we recorded episodes for things like Good Burger and Heavyweights and things of that nature... We backlogged a good 5 or 6 movie-related episodes of this show to the point that I'm going to have some episodes to play from now until the end of this year, the end of 2009, and it's kind of put a kink in a lot of plans, and we've sort of made a mistake by recording so many episodes, really. But which is why these conversational episodes are really going to have to be the anchor of the show for a while, because this is where things get current, you know. But we sat down earlier tonight with a calendar and some post-its and planned out basically when our episodes are going to be put on the air for the next 2 months.
Because we wanted to do a 2012 tie-in where on Cinemantics I covered the movie, but here we talked about things that related to the movie but were not directly...
More about like the actual theory of 2012 and things like
and
that.
And stuff of that nature, yeah, the philosophical... arguments and whatnot.
Because I won't go into it too much, because maybe I'll just save it for months from now. So what we decided to do is we're going to wait until 2012 hits DVD and power through it one more time.
Right, because we wanted to have these two episodes air, you know, close to each other.
Well, there was no way to work
But there
it
was
out.
No way to work it out with all these backlogged episodes. So we decided to put that project on hold.
Yeah, because, but just to be very short about this, I have my own personal issues with 2012. And I'm not talking about the movie, I'm talking about the year. And definitely someone who's a bit unnerved about the concept.
Were you unnerved by Y2K?
No, actually.
Because people were touting that, oh, end of the world.
Well, because that... Okay, we're going to talk about this briefly. I don't mean to get, you know, philosophical or theological with anyone, but speaking as a guy who was raised around Baptists and Christianity, I can say that from a... And... Just bear with me, people. This can be kind of ironic if you want it to be. I'll let you make it ironic, because I would be right there with you in a lot of cases. But I mean, a lot of comedians have made this joke by now. But, you know, if God was going to end the world, why would he end it at midnight, January 1st, 2000, Eastern Standard Time? You know, like, by the time it turned January 1st, 2000, in whatever country had it first, we were like, oh... That's not going to happen. Now, in addition, you know, there's not really, to date, there's not really that much science or literature before that that really said anything about 2000 being anything special.
Well, then why should 2012 be any different?
Because, my calendar, sir.
Because when it hits December 21st, 2012... Which country gets that first? Why should it be any different there?
I will actually have you know that they know what time it's apparently going to be. I'll tell you my story. Okay, we're going to talk about this. We really are. The reason why I'm unnerved, and I'll tell you part of it has to do with presentation, from what I'm about to tell you. My 11th grade year back in high school, we watched this documentary about the Mayans in one of my history classes, narrated by TV's Sam Waterston.
I love him.
As do I. Which really lent a lot of credence to some of the things they were saying. You can't help but agree, but believe Jack McCoy when he tells you something.
Or Abraham Lincoln from Ken Burns' Civil War documentary.
That's right, that's right. I thought you were talking about the terrible TV movie about Abraham Lincoln that he was in that me and Stephanie tried to watch a couple months ago.
Man, he was in a movie?
He was in a TV movie about Abraham Lincoln.
Documentary, but I guess he's done Lincoln multiple times.
A couple times, yeah. But anyway, it was they were talking about how, you know, the theory about the Mayan calendar and how, like, they've predicted all these astrological things, or pardon me, astronomical, more like, things that have happened, star patterns and changes in climate and things of that nature that have happened for the past thousands of years. And that their calendar, as they've marked it down, ends, and this is not, like, across the board. This was something, and because it was, you know, for an American television special, they made a point of telling us the specific time for us. And so, Sam Waterston says, you know, and it will end December 21st, 2012, 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as soon as I heard that, I literally almost shat my pants. Because, first off, once again, it's TV's Jack McCoy telling me when I'm going to die. Which, you believe him. If those judges and those juries believe him, and they should because Jack McCoy is the best damn lawyer television's ever seen, then yes, there's reason to be scared. But also because, I mean, when we mentioned this, this kind of ties back to my issues with Drag Me to Hell, in a way. I've always had a massive fear of death, the afterlife, you know, whether there is an afterlife, things of that nature, and apocalyptic prophecies, especially coming from something that they tout as having predicted all these things that have happened over thousands of years, like, to the letter, like, without mistake. It'll fuck with your head. It really will. And I mean, my main reason for wanting to see 2012 today was because, as I told Nick, and I think he knows this, because of how many times I bounced up and down in my seat during certain scenes, I love destruction. I love watching CGI buildings fall down. I love watching chasms form in Los Angeles. Like, I mean,
well, the problems with the movie aside, and there are several.
We'll discuss this when it hits DVD. But
the special effects are awesome.
Good God! If you want to, if you want to see, not to go off on, we really don't need to talk about this too much. But if you want to see, like, some of the best just like destruction CGI ever, I really would say that. See 2012. It's really.
I would agree with that assessment.
I mean, it's insane. This guy's taint. I mean, it's from Mr. Show. You don't know what I'm talking about.
No.
There's a sketch on Mr. Show. This is how we'll divert away from 2012 without going too far into it. There's an episode of Mr. Show with Bob and David, that classic cult hit HBO sketch comedy series starring Bob Odenkirk and David Cross, where there's an episode entitled "It's Insane This Guy's Taint." Because there's a sketch that is kind of a parody of the film Boogie Nights, also starring Mark Wahlberg. How about that?
Ah.
Where it's about this porn producer who discovered the power and the magic of the taint. Which, I don't mean to get disgusting for our viewers, but if you are our listeners, but I...
It's good that they're not viewers, because if we were talking about taints on a
video podcast,
that might prove... Who knows where it would lead.
Exactly, but no. I'll go ahead and tell you folks, because you're grown-ups, you should be at least. It's got the little explicit tag next to the episode, so you should know better. The taint, for those of you who don't know, and why wouldn't you, is the stretch of skin between, for a man, it's between the scrotum and the rectum, and on a woman, between the vagina and the rectum. It's basically that little patch of skin in between the front and the back of you. You know, and it's actually come up a lot more in comedy recently, but this sketch is from, like, 1997. But anyway, it's about, like, this Boogie Nights kind of producer, and he creates...
I wish they got Burt Reynolds for that.
It's actually David Cross with a mustache and a afro wig, but no, it's he creates taint porn, and he has this one star who's, like, got the best taint ever, and there's a scene, and he's not even talking about the main taint guy. He said they're at a party, and, like, the camera's boogieing around and following everybody, and he puts his arm around this one guy, and he's like, "You gotta see this guy. Tell him about your taint." And the guy's like, "I got a 5-inch taint." And then he's like, "It's insane, this guy's taint." And hence the episode title.
That show could be weird sometimes.
It was very weird, and it's one of the reasons why I love it so much. Mr. Show with Bob and David. Check it out, folks.
And it was HBO, so their comedy could be as dirty as they want.
Oh, yeah. And they go to
I
some...
I like that
interesting
sketch
places.
They did where it was the two guys who were at a bar, and they're going to fight each other, but they can't bring each other to fight each other. And so, like, they live together for, like, 70 years. Like,
they get married.
They get married and all that stuff about fighting. And then one of them dies, and the other one's like, I wasted my whole life.
Yeah. That is from an episode entitled Eat Rotten Fruit from a Shitty Tree. That show had some of the best episode titles ever. Like, there's some really long ones, like, if you're going to write a comedy sketch, you're going to have some rat feces in there. Or an episode called the Worst Disaster in Broadway History. Or there's a lot of great episode titles. Oh, Patriotism, Pepper, and Professionalism. I think it's one of them. There's a lot of...
Alliteration.
Yeah, there's a lot of... Mr. Show. Seriously. Check it out, guys. Oh, we talked about a lot of things. I don't know if we... Do we want to end it up here? I mean, do we... What can we do? I mean, have you anything else you want to bring to the table, Nick, right now?
I don't know. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I mean, do you feel that we've ended on a positive note?
Mr. Show is a definite positive note.
That's right, because you know what? It's insane this guy's taint. I'll say it again. No, I won't. Except for that one time. But
And that.
That's my mom. No, we're not doing that again. Snap. That just happened.
Ha ha. Yepper.
You douche. you know, I gotta talk about something actually before we head out the door. I was listening to episode 15 of this show, which came out the day we're recording this, the episode in which we discover the 1995 classic Heavyweights. And I'm gonna say it again. I was a complete bitch to you in that episode, and I apologize. There were a lot of moments. During Heavyweights, the Heavyweights episode, there were so many moments where I was just like, I was kind of a control-hungry bitch. And
well, it was one of your favorite films.
It's true. Because you know what? You know what Heavyweights is? The best movie of all time!
It's true.
It's weird. I felt like I couldn't go an episode without saying that.
It's the best movie of all time from far away.
Tom Hodges. Oh my gosh, we're gonna do this on the air. We're not winding things up yet. I feel bad because usually as we're winding things down, I like to start playing Nights on Broadway. You listeners and Nick know this. There's a certain point where Nights on Broadway starts to play.
Yes.
Now usually that would be it, but no, I've got to do this one last thing on the air because there's something.
Are you doing what I think you're gonna do?
I'm gonna look up these modern pictures of.
That's what I thought you were gonna do.
Yes. Oh, it scares you a little bit. I can tell. No. This is a bit of a follow-up for people who listen to the Heavyweights podcast. Let's see.
You should probably tell them who Tom Hodges and what's-his-name are.
Okay, well, I mean, if you listen to episode 15, or if you didn't, either way, Tom Hodges and also Aaron Schwartz were both people in the film Heavyweights. Tom Hodges played sort of a villainous henchman named Lars from a country that's far away. And Aaron Schwartz played the lead character by the name of Jerry Garner. And we were talking about this on that episode, how both of them haven't had much of a career after that. Not that movie like ruined anybody's career, it's just they just didn't do much. Because that movie's great, and it launched a couple of careers, actually. But
Such as?
Really, Ben Stiller kind of came into his own after that. Like, that was really kind of a good launch pad for him. And Kenan Thompson. I mean, it wasn't really his launch pad, but it was certainly on his road to stardom. But I'm going to type it in the way I did. Heavyweights, Tom Hodges... And images. Okay, that's not what I had in mind. Heavyweights. Lars? I'm trying to find where I found it.
Is Heavyweights one word?
Yes. Oh, that might explain it. Images. Here we go. All right. Let's see. And here we go. Found the picture. And the picture of Aaron Schwartz is also on this page. Okay. We're going to start with Aaron Schwartz. So I'm going to... folks, I don't know how to tell you... I'll tell you how to find this. Go on Google and search Heavyweights Lars. Go down to the bottom of the page, and you'll find... see a link. It says pics.livejournal.com, and it'll be a picture of a person with a mustache and wearing like a blue jacket. That's Tom Hodges. That's the page we're on, and we're about to show him also pictures of Aaron Schwartz. This is honestly, even if they don't find it, I just want to hear your reaction and put it on, you know, long lasting record. So here's Aaron Schwartz as you remember him.
Wow.
And here he is now.
Oh my god.
Is he not dreamy as fuck?
What is that from?
That is apparently from...
I am going to track that down.
The one thing that makes me sad is that apparently it's because he is now on... He's either on Gossip Girl or on some like web series spinoff of
Gossip
Girl.
Looks like Gossip Girl.
But if you scroll down on the page, you will also find Tom Hodges, which I hope the old picture of him is first. Let me look it up first. This is fun. Scrolling down, finding Tom Hodges. This would really be best served for the episode where we're talking about heavyweights, but I know we're a little late on this. So here's a few more pictures of Aaron Schwartz.
I am very impressed.
Look at that guy.
Wow.
Right?
Age has been kind to him.
Certainly has. Let's... Oh, boy. Okay, I'm not going to actually show you the pictures just yet. Just know that I'm about to scroll down, and you're going to see two pictures of Tom Hodges as he looks now. And you remember what he used to look like? And here he comes.
Aw, I'm sad now.
The bottom picture isn't as bad. The top one makes him look kind of round. And I was mentioning to Nick when I was first discussing this before we went on the air, I noted that he has kind of an old person double chin. Not like a fat double chin, but an old person double, like an aged double chin.
Right.
Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah.
Okay. But that's him. But also, interesting little tidbit down at the bottom, that's the British kid from the movie.
Aw, he's cute.
I knew it was too hot in that bus.
The British kid. Why he was there in North Carolina is beyond me.
In the mountains of North Carolina, after New Jersey. I really feel bad because we had that whole setup toward an end. And then we did that. And then, like I said, usually I would start nights on Broadway there, but I think I probably will start it around now. It had kind of an awkward ending this episode. It could have stopped at that one point, but it didn't.
Yeah, but we had to look at the dreaminess of Aaron Schwartz.
I guess we did. Well, I feel terrible and awkward now. I think it's no better time than this than to end this...
Let's end this pathetic hoedown.
Let's do that. So I guess... thank you for listening, folks. I hope you enjoyed how awkward this ended, and I hope you'll join us next time. Thank you, Nick, once again for stopping by.
Always a pleasure.
You're pretty much my official co-host at this point.
Yay!
I'm sure I'll have other people.
Hopefully.
But you've been around a lot, and I thank you for your continued service as a co-host.
I salute you.
Thank you. And I urge you folks to listen to his podcast once again at cinemanticspodcast.blogspot.com.
Hopefully to appear soon on iTunes.
Yes, we're working on making that happen. Thanks again, Nick Melton. Thanks to you folks for listening, and as always, go experience 7 days. Good night, folks.
I'm on the midnight train to Georgia.
On the midnight.